We're talking about J.L. Tucker with and his family, his wife, his daughters, and his grandchildren. We're talking about a man that at age 19 volunteered for a job, went to do it in Vietnam, and when he first got there, there were no officers there to help him, so there were about 10 of them, so they organized into two-man teams and went to work, and this helicopter landed. It was a Huey helicopter, and he didn't open the door. The folks inside the helicopter opened the door, and there were 8 or 10 KIAs. As soon as they got that helicopter unloaded, another helicopter landed, but it wasn't a Huey this time. It was one of those big Chinooks. And it landed, and they opened the door, and it was full of wounded and KIAs, and that just kept on going, you said, for 48 hours. So we've been talking about the impact of that on that man when he came home and through his life, and then we've talked about that he finally sought help through the Legacy Peer Group, realized that helping other veterans helped him, so that the more that he could help other veterans, the more it helped develop himself or cure himself. Ed, take it from there. What's your opinion, or what happened?
Well, I don't know if anybody has seen American Sniper. I just saw it last night. The very end, when he was just like JL, and the wife couldn't get into his world, the kids couldn't get into his world. His therapist, just like JL's therapist, Dr. Richardson, got into his head, showed him veterans. I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't seen the American Sniper. But there's this legend, and that's what they called him. He went through the same thing. I can't even imagine how he lived with all that in his head. It was finally what gave him his life back and finally gave him hope and joy was given back. That's what you'll see in the movie. A lot of soldiers go through, not quite as much as he was. He's a great hero. At the end of the movie, it just shows you how much of an impact it could have on you and does. I think by what he does at the end of the movie shows exactly how advocacy helps.
You know, when he was telling me the story, he said that of the 10 men, occasionally they all had to take turns losing controls or being upset, or, you know, because of things that they would see when they did the helicopters, and how many of those soldiers would have small gunshot to the forehead, which meant that they were wounded and that Vietnamese soldiers would execute the wounded, and that they would see how each one of these men died. And that imprints, once you've seen it, it's not going to go away. You're going to carry it with you until you find a way to store it correctly and those kind of things. Is that what the doctor helped him do?
Doc just started three or four SANS groups. SANS, once again, means the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. Imprinting is the right word, I think. You know, that's what I was talking about early. Don't be like the Vietnam veterans. You know, there wasn't any help. Finally, when it came, nobody goes to get help. What we're trying to show the young men and women here is there is hope and help. And you don't need to be like us. You could get out of this imprinting, because that's what you see. That's what's in your head. Mm-hmm. By going out there and getting support, you could get better life.
Ms. Tucker, you said you noticed that it got worse to start with?
Mm-hmm. To start with, now, it got worse because I guess it was, you know, just all back fresh, you know, in his mind. After he joined the Legacy Peer, I mean, he just... He had a different life. It's just like he had people he could talk to that had been through the same thing he'd been through. You know, had more than to friends and people he could talk to and try to help. He tried to help people.
He wasn't really able to help a whole lot,
yeah.
So he would get us to, we would always have to be by his side to drive him or pick up furniture or pick up bicycles, and it doesn't matter how sick he was, he didn't stop. Here, the last 6 months or so, he had to have a walker. He still, like 3 weeks before he died, we were out there painting a barn, helping a veteran in Maryville.
Yeah.
And he came to like five or six of our shows, didn't he?
Yes,
we were
did.
Doing a series of shows, and he would show up at the end. He'd sit there real quiet in the back, and all of a sudden he would want to talk a minute. And he would come in, and it was just wonderful.
Yeah, we called him the voice of our group. He always ended the show with a prayer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And he would tell everybody how thankful,
yeah,
and he loved everybody.
That's right. He believed in prayer.
Yeah.
Sure did.
Shelley, when did you notice that your father was changing?
In about the year after that he joined that group.
Took a year to mm-hmm. really see changes?
Yeah.
Did he talk to you about what he was doing or what he was going through?
Yeah.
What did he say?
And it really helped him to go over there.
Christy?
He would call me. I remember whenever Ed and Freddie asked him to become vice president. Yeah. He called me immediately on his way back, I guess, from the meeting and asked me to if he could buy my dinner. So I went over and met him at Long John's, and he was just overwhelmed with joy, you know, and he was asking me, do you think I can do it? Do you think I can? I don't know what to do. Should I? I'm not smart enough, or I don't. Told him, I said, Daddy, you have as much to offer as anybody. If they've asked you to be vice president, then that's an honor, and you need to take that and just run with it. And that's exactly what he did. He ran with it.
Well, he brought you along, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. He we pretty much all had to help him. He wasn't able to do it alone. Looking back, I'm glad that we did, even though sometimes it was convenient or he was all the time needing us to. He had never been on a computer.
Oh, yeah.
But I taught him finally how to get email and, you know, all that. So he was learned so much the past couple of years that you just don't realize how much pain and the burden on your heart that you're hiding until you get help.
Ms. Tucker, did you just step back and watch it happen, or what? I mean, what was your role? How did you deal with all this?
I was glad that he had found somebody, people, you know, he could talk to, and it gave him a purpose in life.
He had an impact, didn't he? He realized that he could impact other people's lives.
So when he came vice president of the group,
Vet to Vet,
that was really something big for him.
And what is Vet to Vet?
Vet to Vet is one of our affiliations that helps veterans in recovery. So they actually provide the facilitators for the Legacy Peer Support Group, and they also train mentors for Veterans Treatment Court. Sometimes they provide money if people can't afford to get to the program. We've helped out with rent. We try to get socks and bikes, and then they provide all the material for the recovery. They do both secular and religious.
Okay. I want to know which one of you three pointed him toward the VA. Or was it all three of you? Or
to Anderson County?
Yes.
Went to a veteran service officer?
Yes, uh-huh.
But what made him do it?
We all encouraged him. I'm more of the persistent one. You would think I was the parent, but he taught me that. I kept just telling him that the more you talk about it, the better chance it is that you're going to heal. And the way he was going, it wasn't good. And we were all just, you know, scared. I think he finally listened to us all, or maybe he got to the point where he didn't have a choice.
I want to read you something that he said to me, okay? I asked him, if someone calls you, I said, I understand that last week somebody did call you, talked about a lady that called, and he said, well, she called very concerned about her son. Now, this is JL talking. Someone had called him. He said, she called very concerned about her son, who had been a heavy drinker for years, and he was totally disabled and drawing benefits from the VA. He had started drinking whiskey, and she was really concerned about his health, and he had a full heart attack, lost all his teeth, and was just in sad shape, and she asked me what she needed to do about it. So he knew what to do about it, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So he said, all you need to do is encourage him to see a psychologist, get him to VA medical care, and she said yes. So I said he needs to see a psychologist. She said that what will that cost him, and I said it won't cost him anything. Is that true?
All right. Yeah, if you're a veteran, especially if you're a combat vet, all you have to do is sign up. That's pretty easy.
Could you imagine a man that had gone 40 or 45 years without care who realized that he could intervene in somebody, another young man's life, so that young man wouldn't have to go 45 or 50 years?
How good
that would make you feel.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, we just received four young combat veterans in our Veterans Treatment Court. They're in the same boat. They're going, I never went and got help. I don't know what's wrong with them. They're already doing a substance abuse. Fortunately for them, we have Veterans Treatment Courts around to help them.
Welcome back to Veteran Next Door. A little frivolity there. JL sought help, got help, changed his life, and then, Christy, you said it's hard to say all the things you want to say.
In 2 hours.
Well, start.
We've covered a lot of Daddy's purpose in life. It was really good to see him at a point of even as sick as he was, back in 2010, fell and hit his head and was in the UT Trauma Center for about 10 weeks in a coma. But he finally came out of a coma and had to learn how to come off a respirator pretty much, and was transferred to St. Mary's Select for about 3 more months after that. I think that God taught him a lot, even at our weakest moments, when we feel the most desperate, are the very times when God is going to do his greatest work with strengthening. I mean, he strengthened Daddy to the point of we didn't know if Daddy would ever get back to being 100%, but he came back 200%. It was then that he got help, and I mean, he lived for helping others. He was always there for any of us, no matter what we needed. We grew up knowing what a family really means. So
here's his words. "Well, my role is to get out and do whatever needs to be done." He was talking about bicycles and clothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, we have a business meeting every week. That must be at the Legacy Pier thing. Oh. I listen to Ed and Freddie a lot. There, they do most of the talking, and I just do like I did in Vietnam. I just do what I was asked to do. And then he made another statement. "Well," he says, "I'm a lot better than I was when I joined the group, but I am not a coward. I don't want to be 100% cured because I don't want to leave this group, because reaching out to these veterans that don't know anything about post-traumatic stress disorder, and they need to know, and that they are learning through us." That's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing statement. Mm-hmm. You know, Shelley, what do you think? Sum up your dad here for me.
He was a very courageous man, and going to the groups and stuff within the last year and a half, mm-hmm, meant a lot to me.
What did you learn?
Well, it just meant a lot to me to take care of my dad and stuff. So,
were you driving him?
No, he was driving himself, but I would have to go with him to make sure he didn't fall asleep or get sick, or, you know, so if something happened to him, I can call for help.
He struggled with a lot of health issues. Even, you know, when I got to know him, he was having health issues daily. Miss Tucker, what about you? You had a pretty amazing man there at the end, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, we sure did. It just like, I mean, our whole 47 and a half years we were married, it's been a lot of ups and downs, problems, but like the girl said, you know, in the last years, he was just a wonderful person. And he wanted to help anybody that he could.
Mm-hmm.
And if he said, you know, a veteran or whatever, if they called him, he'd sit and talk to him and try to encourage him. And he would tell them, you know, you could do it. I did. And you could do it too. And I always remember him, the love that he had for his family.
Mm-hmm. Christy?
It's kind of hard to top that. But
how many lives did you see him change or affect or better?
Well, I know that he would go around at home. I would stop, and if Mom and Michelle were gone, I'd stop and just check on him before going to work. He didn't really like to be alone. He was kind of scared to be alone. I'd stop by the house and make sure he have his coffee and his contact sheet. But
Now, y'all did a bicycle thing. What was that all about?
Oh, the bicycles were through the treatment court.
Veterans Treatment Court.
And we, Daddy went full blast. He wanted to get as many bicycles as we could to donate to the veterans going through the program, because they don't have cars, or some of them are homeless, or to help them get to group meetings and to job interviews. And
how many bicycles did you all round up?
Enough that we had to tell them to stop bringing the bicycles.
So to get one, you had, what was the requirement to get one?
Christy just mentioned most of the participants in the recovery or veterans treatment court don't have transportation. One that stuck out in our mind The veteran had to walk 3 miles after he got off the bus. So Ron Hanover, who's the court director, said, yeah, maybe we could get bikes. All we did is tell that to JL, and Christy and the family jumped in, and we actually had to say, stop bringing them.
Okay. So
that was a good thing.
So if you needed transportation and couldn't have access to a car, you
get a bike.
JL would see to it that you had a bicycle.
Right.
That's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. He described that battle to me. In his own words, here's what he said. When they went in, I think it was the 1st and the 5th Regiment or Battalion and the 1st and the 7th Cav, when they went into X-ray, which was a landing zone, they didn't have any idea of how many enemy was even there. There had been no recon or anything like that, so they had a big mountain there called Chupong Massive, and it went from Vietnam over into Cambodia. These people would come down the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and they would just cross over into Vietnam whenever they got ready. It turned out there were between 2,500 and 3,000 of the enemy, and I think there were maybe 4,000. And when we went in, there were only 400 of us. Ed, in one sentence, what impact did JL have on your organization?
He taught us never to give up. As you heard here, he was really sick. He refused to take certain medicines because he might miss the meetings. And when he passed away, everybody was crying, of course. What we have is a picture in our LPG. And then when people really are struggling, we go, look what JL did. If he could do it as sick as he was, we should be able to do it too.
He came out of the abyss, and once he found someone that would reach out and pull him and say, here's the help that you need, here's the information you need, but in return for that, we need you to help us help these other veterans. And that was a fair trade for him.
Yeah, he became the hope that everybody's looking for.
Right. Well, our guests today have been Miss Tucker, JL's wife, his two daughters, Shelley and Christy. What, 6 grandchildren?
Mm-hmm.
We got to talk about a remarkable man. You know, like I said, when I met him, I just wondered, you know, who is this quiet little man? And then they asked him to come in and wrap up each one of our shows. And I said, this guy is driven, and he is happy about what he's doing. So those are things we need to be aware of. I want to thank you all for coming in today. So, Christy and Shelley and Ms. Tucker.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You had a remarkable man in your family. What's that number, real
quick? Don't forget, it's 865-336-2624.
Give us a call if you need it from me. It's Randall Baxter, randallbaxter.com.